Well, I'd like to introduce Keith Dole, who is a farmer in Canada who has been using the scalar energy, the scalar IQ, starting with the Awaken, and then you're using the Miracle now. Is that right, Keith?
Yes, this is the first season that we've used the Miracle, right at, starting at seeding time, so it's definitely more. Yeah, go ahead.
Are you seeding the crops now? So we're at the end of February. Has that process begun?
No, up here it won't start until later in April. So we're just doing some prep work, and this is just the time to share what we found from the last growing season, and get some seeds prepared, and that kind of work is happening now.
Yes. So when we spoke on Friday, you had mentioned that you've been using the Scalar iCubes for 5 years, and after 2 years, you stopped using pesticides entirely. Did I understand you correctly?
The pesticides are they're more around the for bug control, and it hasn't been required for the last couple of years. The pest there are still some bugs in the crop, but not like they used to be. So it's definitely had an effect on the population of them.
Okay, so, and what was the protocol exactly that you did? I'm just really curious how, for those that are doing any kind of farming or even just to understand how that you actually used the scalar coils, because I think you started with the seed crop first.
So the seeds, we have them cleaned by a separate business. We take them off the farm and get mm-hmm. them cleaned, so any contaminants is out of there, the smaller particles, and then when it comes back to the farm, we put them in a large steel granary, and I'll put the coil underneath the granary for a day or so. And just let it run on the, I think I was using the food charge program, so the one that is for charging food, and I'd let that run through a few times, and just have it kind of sealed up there so nothing can get into it. And the previous processes were having to treat the seeds with it's a type of poison that they kind of paint on the seeds to keep the bugs from eating the seed before it germinates. And we haven't used that now for at least 5 years. We just charge them with the coil, and we put a little coating of liquid fertilizer on the seed as it, like, just before it goes into the ground, and then they just germinate quick enough that it's not an issue to be eaten by bugs while they're in the dirt.
So would you say that in using the scalar coils that they germinate faster? Is that one of the issues? That does it speed up the germination process?
Yeah, I would say so. It's I don't know exactly the timeline, but it's noticeable. Like, it's I've done some tests, charged and not charged, and it's a few days, I would say, difference. So it just increases the vitality, whereas that's all you really want. And sometimes up north we have the conditions, the ground is cold and it's not exactly perfect for germination. So anything we can do to help get the seeds out of the ground faster is to It just helps the plant out.
Because that's a key thing about scalar energy. It's like it freezes water faster and stays at an ideal temperature longer. So it seems to optimize the rhythm of certain things in nature. You know, water's going to freeze if you put it in a freezer. But in the case of the seeds, what seeds were you germinating?
Okay. We most of the testing was on it was hard red spring wheat, so it's
okay.
The wheat that you use for making bread and that type of thing. So it's fairly common grown in northern Alberta, and it's the milling the wheat that they use for milling and that kind of thing.
Okay, so the germination is, I would say, maybe optimized, sped up. It would be interesting to get like some kind of high, a camera lens that could actually show the process, like a high-speed photography lens. But it's sped up, and that probably has a lot to do with not attracting the bugs at that stage as well, not needing to paint it with poison. Because if it's sped up, then there's less of an opportunity for pests or bugs to come in. Is that, am I understanding this correctly? So that other people can understand the process. And then when you plant the seeds, this is the part of the protocol. Oh, and I was going to ask you, how large is the bin that you're stimulating?
It would probably hold 3,000 bushels somewhere around there. It's quite a large hopper bin, so there's room underneath there to put the coil right underneath the center of the bin, and all of the grain is up above it. So it's not just like a regular flat bottom container for grain. It's the hopper version that's seems to help the process. So you can actually feel the seeds in your hand have a different feeling to them. And I always just call the coil to me is just like a life force amplifier. So anything that it's around, it amplifies the life force of that that product or whatever you like, the water, just like you said, it's working with the smaller particles inside of the seeds and food to help them more increase their vitality.
Yes. And so you're using one coil under 3,000 bushels of grain. That's pretty amazing. And then once the seeds are planted, what's your protocol? What do you do?
So as we're seeding, we take the coil with us in the tractor, and we have it running on an inverter. So we charge the soil row by row as we're seeding. So it's the whole unit ends up being activated with the coil. So that happens all day long as we go from field to field. They charge the seeds, the fertilizer, everything is basically in that zone of the coil.
Okay, so when you're driving, the tractor through the rows, and you're running the Miracoil. How do you power it? Does the tractor have its own?
Yeah, we just into the accessory plug. I just plug an inverter that converts the DC to AC, and then plug it in that way. So I just have it all set up in a case so that it's contained, and then just have the coil protected a little bit with some cloth or something, so it doesn't get dirty.
So that's pretty awesome. So, and so you spend the day basically driving through the rows of planted seeds. And are you using the stimulating the food soundtrack as well when you're driving around, or do you use something else for yourself? Because that could bring you into pretty deep delta, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think mostly what I was using was the miracle track.
Okay.
I did change it around once in a while, but there was, I think that was mostly, I could have to check my notes, but because it's, I don't know, I just kind of felt that that was like an all-inclusive thing that would help. And I guess the intention behind it was to activate the minerals and the energy in the soil. So that's why I was kind of thinking of the miracle tract as I was going to just return the soil growing, like there's just the natural nutrients that are in the ground, and that's been an issue with growing a lot of GMO crops and the canola, is that the ground just doesn't have the natural organic structure that it used to have. So that was something that I was something that we were trying to talk about the other day. So it has to do with the enzymes in the soil and the micronutrients and all of the things that cost a lot to create artificially, but if we can naturally bring them back, reactivate that part of the soil, then the plants just they get a better start that way.
So right, we were talking about changing the pH factor and the nutrient density of the soil, and you had mentioned also that there were 100 million acres of land that are contaminated in the U.S. So how do you see the miracle actually shifting the lack of nutrients in the soil? And by the way, Bob is working on it now that he's going to create a specialized soundtrack for anyone growing crops that, because you're using the generic for stimulating food, which has a lot to do with Delta, but we also have and can access even more frequencies specifically for crops, the growth of crops and the nutrients in the soil, for example. But I just thought it would be interesting for people to understand how you saw the soil shifting into a more alkaline soil, if I understood it correctly, and perhaps more nutrient dense.
Yeah. So it's kind of difficult to explain, but the more natural way to show it is like years ago, before the crop rotations got kind of compressed and put in, like it all became about cash flow. A lot of farmers would grow clover and alfalfa and different things to help keep the organic matter in the soil. They grow that every 3 or 4 seasons just to keep the ground so it's more has more fiber to it. And now there's a lot of fields around our farm that they've grown canola for 15 years straight and just used artificial fertilizers, and the soil just looks like sand. It's just dead. It's just like has no fiber to it. It's just the only nutrients it gets is the stuff that they haul from town, and they just keep having to put more and more on to grow a crop and create some type of margin. So what I found is that I was trying to explain to you the feeling of the ground after it gets charged, like after we drive back and forth all day long with this coil, that the field gets a different vibration to it. Like you can feel the dirt, and there's a little clip in that that Avatar movie where they take a picture in the forest, in the rainforest, and it shows all these little lit up synapses of the trees, like where the it's almost like the nervous system under the ground in there. And that's the kind of sense of what I like. That's the easiest way to explain what's happening, is like all these little passageways in the ground that are designed for supporting life and the supporting plants, they just get turned back on, same way that the coil does to our body, where it's like it's just reactivating our nervous system. The earth has that same system.
So you see yourself as using the miracle, or the miracle, to reactivate the cellular, the correct memory, the higher frequency memory. That's incredible, actually. I can see that it would begin to sort of like you're instituting like a new matrix into the dirt, actually, new information. We'll actually create maybe some nutritional frequency soundtracks for the soil then.
Yeah, I would say that would be a nice, like, so what's generally missing from the soils is like the macronutrients are one part of it, which is like your nitrogen and your phosphorus and the bigger things that help the plants grow above the dirt. But the micronutrients are what helps the plants grow below the dirt. Like that's what helps their roots stay healthy and all of that stuff that we don't necessarily see. But that's something that we've found now, is if you try, like, for one thing, these plants get this major root system on that's really healthy compared to what they used to do, is just get one little stem with a few little branches on. Now it's just like a mass of roots, which is good for say it doesn't rain for a few days, then there's the plants can shake that off if they've got a better base underneath them. So there's a lot of things that come into play. The pH is definitely an important part of that, but all that the pH does generally is just help the plants take on the nutrients, same as with our bodies. If we have an imbalance in our pH level and we take a bunch of vitamins, we don't necessarily get the benefit from them. So that's the same that happens with the plants and the dirt, is the pH helps the plants to be able to absorb the nutrients that are there.
And you've seen that the pH actually has been dramatically altered over the last 5 years, or do you test that, or do you just see it?
We do, like, we haven't done, like, they call it a 3D soil testing, where they're making a little grid and checking the same spot all the time. And there's a lot of factors that come into play with that, because we're growing different crops, and if you grow canola before, then it creates the pH to shift. But generally the soil is just it just keeps moving more and more towards a healthier state, because we can just tell by like just the way the ground works up and the thing. It's just getting more back to instead of like just clay where it's lumpy and like hard to work with, it's more like peat moss, where it's just there's a lot of organic matter there, and it's like potting soil that you would want to grow a seed into. A lot of this dirt that's being artificially fertilized, it just turns into this, like, I don't know, it's kind of like clay. It's not that conducive to growing unless you're constantly adding to it.
So are you actually using no fertilizer at this point? Is it?
We've cut back almost by 2/3 this year. It wasn't really intentional, but we just had some miscommunications in the fertilizer. That we have another contractor that does that for us, and we just ended up, we did one section of canola that we ended up cutting back by a little more than 2/3 of what we normally use, and the crop turned out just as good or better than if we would have put our full rate on. So anything like that, you just end up with more margin. Like I wouldn't say that you would be able to cut that right out of your program, but it's going to be more usable for the plants. So I would say, like, you could cut it back a third the first year and then just kind of feel it out as you go. But it was surprising, the crop that ended up growing there was just as good or better than the ones that we put the higher rates on.
Interesting. And how much of that is your cost in farming? Is the cost of fertilizer applied to crop?
It's the main, between that and some of the chemicals, I would say the fertilizer right now, with the rates, guys are they just keep trying to, you're basically buying a crop is what happens. So people are going like 500 pounds an acre or more, and the cost of that stuff is $500 a ton or more, like $600-$700 depending on what type of nutrients you put in there. So it's when you're covering lots of ground, it's a lot of a lot of risk there. You're putting a lot of money into the ground, so
it's costly. And if it doesn't work, mm-hmm. it's kind of like throwing mm-hmm. money away. Well, and it's a repetitive cost, not something you do once. That's incredible, mm-hmm. actually. So you're cutting back on the cost of fertilizer and pesticides. Have you been using any structured water when you're, like, do you ever I guess that's my question. Have you ever used any scalar-wave structured water?
I have treated some fields. Like, we will do like a pre-seed treatment to the uh-huh. soil, just with liquid, and put some liquid fertilizer and just a little bit to clean up the weeds and stuff. So I can treat like a large, I don't know what we have, it's like... I think it's 3,000 gallons. It's just a great big tank in the back of the trailer. So I just wanted to get a sense for what that does. And it's, I think, because some of the water, like we're bringing the water from off the farm, and a lot of it is treated water, and I don't really like having that going on the ground, but having the coils do the water treatment program seems to get the pH closer. And I've even done like a 5-gallon pail, just put it on top of the coil and then do it, let it treat it, and then just pour that into the tank. So it's like a concentrated version of that.
That's a very good idea, because so it becomes complementary. So it's getting fed, because if you can actually even slightly change the size of the water molecule, then the water becomes more absorbable, and it will make the plant healthier. It should. So what implications do you see of scalar energy having for global farming? It's amazing that you had this insight to use the scalar technology, because we never suggested it. We have focused almost exclusively on consciousness, but of course everything has consciousness. So mm-hmm. and the food is so important, what we're imbibing. But what do you see globally? Like this, do you see that this could be applied in almost any farming situation, let's say hemp? Because I thought you were growing some hemp as well, or was that just experimental?
Yeah, yeah, we've been doing some preliminary testing with it and trying to put that into our rotation as well. And it's a crop that it basically forces you to get away from chemicals because there aren't very many chemicals that are registered to use on it. So either you have to have super clean land or you end up with a fair amount of weeds in the crop is what we found. So it was another thing that we have to do this a different way. We have to, like, I know that hemp is going to be a big crop in the next few years. It already is in certain areas. So we have to change our practices a little bit, and that's a good thing. Like what I saw as far as treating the seeds and doing the quantum activation to the seeds is those seeds end up going all over the planet. We don't know. Like, we take them to the grain elevator, and they go on a train, and you don't know where they end up going. Like, they could be in Australia, they could go to China. It's just a way of spreading that energy around in a way that it's always beneficial. Like, it's going to help even if we get a handful of those seeds in each area. It's going to contribute to the vibration. So there's a funny kind of a little play on words, but in the quantum realms, they talk about fields of consciousness being like something in the etheric realm. And in the farming realm, we can actually treat the fields, which is another term for the dirt where we grow, to be conscious fields. So they're more in line with what the production is, like that. Putting the intention into the dirt and helping that contribute to the vibration of the production.
That's very profound, because actually it's like creating a zero point field in farming, where in that perfect state of harmony, many things can be produced more efficiently and at a higher vibrational level, which could change consciousness actually. That's the most natural way to change consciousness, actually. I was thinking about it yesterday. I was like, that is the most natural way to change consciousness on a global level, is to have the frequencies carried in the food and in the fields, in the zero-point quantum-activated farming fields. So what inspired you to go in this direction? I'm just very curious about this.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of things that contributed to it. It was like, probably one of the main things is my daughter, when she was around 12 or so, she ended up getting type 1 diabetes, and she just wasn't getting any nutrients from her food. And I started doing research on all of the places. Like, she's a really active girl, and she just wanted to play volleyball and play soccer all day long, but she wasn't getting the fuel from her food to sustain that kind of activity. And I just started looking around and seeing how all these young kids were having a similar condition where, they would eat a granola bar or whatever it was available to them to have a little sandwich, but there's no nutrition in that stuff. And so I just started looking into the foods and in the ways that we can help these children to live in this system that we have, where it's all about fast foods and not the way we used to live on the farm, where it was eating vegetables out of the garden. So there's a lot of room for improvement, I guess, in the health and where we're going, and I just didn't see. It was almost like a disconnect where the farmers just ended up started growing commodities instead of growing food. They were just growing stuff to make cash, and I was like, that's not really the role of a farmer. Is they're supposed to be growing food. So it's kind of like now you go away from what you're supposed to be doing. When you start coming back, then there's you just have to change your practices and make different choices. So
I like that way of thinking. And so by changing practices, we can change the consciousness around food and around hemp and around cannabis and whatever else people are growing. But there's one other. How much less, what is the ratio of water, for example, that you use? I like the term quantum miracle activated crop. In a quantum miracle activated crop, what would be the ratio of water that you would have used now versus 5 years ago before you started activating the crops?
Okay, so where we farm, it's just called dryland farming. We don't have irrigation.
Okay.
And that has been an issue where there is like with the different spectrum, I guess, of weather that's been happening, it's not a consistent thing where you get a shower every few days, and the patterns are changing, and the crops are having to adapt to that. So that was one of the things that I found happening is if you would happen to treat a crop with, say, a chemical for weed control, and then you get 5 or 6 days of hot sun after that, the plants are just like they really struggle. It just turns the whole field brown, and it has about 2 or 3 weeks where it has to shake off that chemical treatment. And so if we're able to cut back the rates a little bit, and if the plants have a little better root system to sustain that week or so of hot sun, then they just seem to shake it off a little bit. And then once the weeds are suppressed, then the crop canopy kind of takes over the field, and the weeds can't grow once the crop gets into a few more leaf stage. So it's a pretty critical state there, and it's like that's all. If you have irrigation, you can kind of lessen the factors, I guess, of that that application. But when we're dealing with nature, we have to have a lot more variables in the mix.
Yes, that's actually I didn't realize that. So so actually the actual roots become even more important because they have to sort of sustain the hardships of possibly no water after certain periods of no rain. So that's in the implication in changing the status of the health and the alkalinity of the soil. We had discussed on Friday the use with hemp, for example, which is one of the most, I think it's going to become one of the teachers because it requires very specific treatment. But I just wondered if you wanted to address that where you said about that the hemp is both an attractor of heavy metals and also a transmuter. So it attracts and transmutes. And plus there's a limited list in terms of farming protocol, there's a limited list of things that you can use to treat the hemp. So I just wanted you to review that one time, because we do have people that are interested in hemp farming or in some cases cannabis farming. And I just wondered if you wanted to address that. Yeah, there's a growing interest in that direction.
Yeah. So, and I would say that would be a good crop for some, like for adding into the rotation to help bring the fiber back to the land, and every piece of those plants is usable. Like that's one thing that some people that are just getting started growing it for seed, they end up burning the stalks and all, like the leftovers, but every piece of that plant is usable, and it's going to help us get our sustainability back to balance. So it does take a lot of the contamination out of the air when it's growing. It's just like a big growing sponge. So those plants transmute pollutions and all of the things that we've just come to take as normal, but it's not really, it doesn't have anything to do with nature to be breathing the amount of pollution and even the contamination from other industry things. So it is part of the solution to have as many acres of those plants growing, and it has a certain vitality to it that it's a really durable plant. And one of my friends that's been growing it just by Red Deer in central Alberta, he's even had it where it's being hailed on, and it can still just shake it off and keep growing. Like it's wow, really durable. So it's just once people understand the value of it, and there's things that are happening where it actually, those little fibers that are inside the hemp plant, they're using those for superconductors and for like the screens on your phone can be made from that fiber. So there's a whole new industry that will come into effect because of the benefits of that plant being available to us. So I guess when we treat that stuff, like when we treat it with the coils, something that we found is that it's the usable part of the plant just I don't know, there's more nutrient dense. Like if we go back to how it happened with the wheat ends up having a higher percentage protein. It ends up having more mass per volume, so it's like it's just the density is more, and that's what you get paid for when you go to sell it. So it's like they sell that the cannabis is by the gram. So if you get more grams per plant, then that's helping your margin.
And with the hemp, the more usable, when treated, the more usable parts are, would you say, stronger? Or how would you say, what have you seen in your research with hemp, if you're using scalar or quantum activation?
Yeah, I would say that the plants, they're designed to be completely used, where say with other plants, a lot of it is just waste. It's like it just gets chopped up and put back onto the ground or taken away. So I would think that it depends what they want to grow it for. If they're wanting to grow it for seed production, or if they're wanting to grow it for medicine, or any of those things, that there's all different strains of if different types of seeds that are available now, different varieties. So we can fine tune the frequencies. If Bob is open to looking into those things, then we can adjust the frequencies or tailor those frequencies to the type of crop that we want. Like there's a kind of a crop that's just called industrial hemp that has no THC involved in it, but it is excellent for fiber, and you can actually build a house out of these blocks made of industrial hemp. So there's a lot of neat things that help us create a healthier environment. We can make a home that breathes out of this product and get rid of a lot of the toxic environment that we're spending most of our time in our homes. So.
Yes, and also the use of isolate in different medicinal applications and for creams and lotions that have a more healing benefit. I think it's one of the isolates and the oils, I think, are probably some of the main applications. So that's all medicinal, actually. And yes, Bob, we're very interested in doing that, in assisting, because I think that hemp becomes the teacher in the end, because it transmutes energy and attracts the pollutants, but also the you were saying that the ability to have a pure hemp crop becomes challenging because of the soil that it's been grown in and the air and the water that it's being fed with. So it's going to attract all of the pollutants from those three elements, correct? And then it has to transmute at high speed. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that how you see it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So well, it's in the that all of pretty much a large chunk of the planet is contaminated with glyphosate, and that's basically a fancy salt that's in those products that are treating the land, and it gets in the groundwater, and it's everywhere, and it's in our bodies. It's something that has messed up the enzymes in our stomachs. That's what's causing people to have digestive issues, is that glyphosate is in there. So when the products that are in hemp, even like the hemp hearts and those things that you can put on your cereal, all of those things are really usable proteins. They're proteins that can get back into our bodies and fill those voids that we just have been really deficient in proteins. So that stuff that's in I did a little research on the isolates just in the last few days, and how beneficial that it's kind of a crystalline part of the plant that helps with circulation, and it helps decrease inflammation. And what the common thread that I always find is that every condition that we have starts with inflammation. So it doesn't matter what variety, like what issue you have in your body, it starts with inflammation. And if we can decrease that inflammation in the body by taking these products and adding them to our diet, then we don't need to go for the prescriptions. We'll just naturally get our bodies back into a place where they work the way they're supposed to.
Yes, but we need pure hemp isolates, or pure CBD isolates for that. So, okay, so then the growing with the decreased use of pesticides and the decreased use of fertilizer, would you say that scalar or quantum activation would be very impactful in hemp growing, especially if we start to focus the frequencies on the actual agricultural improving the growth of the hemp crops? Could you see that as a very useful way to shift the land into a healthier environment to grow better quality crops on all levels, but especially things like hemp, I think, are here as the new medicine, but it's almost as though we have to understand that the nature of the plant, the attractor and the transmuter, like, we have to understand it. With the environment as polluted as it is, I can't imagine what the hemp is turning out to be like if it's just grown on any soil. Isn't that problematic throughout the world?
Yeah, I would say it's that's its job. It's like a cleanup plant, and it's I don't know that it contaminates the product. Like it has an effect on it for sure, and that it may take a little while for that. We just don't have an option to grow it in an incubator. Like we can't just feed it oxygen and put it in there. It's like it's really a gift to the planet to help where we're at now, is to clean things up. And I know the criteria, like if they're asking for something to be 99.9% pure, it's like, I don't know how you do that. And I don't really know how they create those products like they're claiming that it is. And that's kind of like the organic thing and all of those other things. It's like there's some room for error, but if that's the intention, then that's fine. Like we can all help move in that direction, but we have to do an assessment of where we're at right now. It's like if you look on the map, and like this fellow was saying, how that large chunk of soil in the States is just brown. It doesn't even grow weeds. It's like it's so so contaminated with whatever toxic stuff that. It's just brown. They just call it brownfield, and it's like it's part of the Restore America project is to start getting some of this dirt growing again. But it's not going to be an overnight thing. It's going to take a few seasons, and we have to be creative and use when they had hemp growing, whenever it was 100 years ago. We didn't have the environmental conditions that we have now, so it's we're going to have to adapt different agricultural processes and use all of the kind of wisdom that we can pull from. So, if anybody has any ideas or been doing tests, then these things that we've integrated, these quantum things, are only going to help that. Like if you can shorten the growing season by a couple of days, if you can eliminate having to deal with pests, and anything that we can do to help those plants be stronger, that's just going to contribute to the whole process.
Thrive, yes, if the plants. And you did say that your use of pesticides was down to zero. After 2 years, though, it took quite a, you know, that would be for a lot of people a long time, but you've had the last three seasons without using pesticides. I don't know if that would work with hemp, because hemp is the attractor. How many, to create 1 kilogram of hemp isolate, of CBD isolate, how many pounds, I don't even know if you know this, but how many pounds of hemp would you need to create 1 kilogram? Do you know?
Yeah, I was just doing some research on it the last few days, and just trying to understand which part of the plant it comes from. And it's, I think there would be, it's in more of the fiber of the plant. It's not the buds and stuff like that. So there's a lot of that people are just considering waste. Like they just try
throwing it away.
And get rid of it. Yeah. And
That's
there's actually a lot of that part of the plant. Just to get like the seeds, for instance, if people are growing it to get a certain variety of seeds inside the stalks and the stems of that plant is where they get the CBD isolate, and that's something that needs to be gathered up as well so that it's not burnt or just chopped up and thrown back on the ground, because the issue with growing hemp is that it doesn't naturally dissolve in the soil. Like that those stalks will stay there for a few years. They're really tough, like the fiber part of it. So that's what deters some people from growing it in rotation, is unless you shave it right to the dirt and take that stuff off, then you have those stalks laying around in your field for a while. But what people need to know is that that is actually valuable stuff as well. Like it needs to be baled up it's just that there wasn't any market for it, so people would just burn it so that they could grow something the next year. And that's really the worst thing you can do for your field, because you're messing around with all the enzymes on the dirt.
Wow, that might be news to a lot of people. And so I wonder, Keith, you've been very generous with your time, and I wonder, would you be willing to be available if someone wanted to consult with you that is interested in using scalar technology to improve the efficiency of their crops? Are you at all available to chat with them if they have questions, or with us if we have questions about using
that? Yeah, I would say.
Okay.
We would maybe have like an open webinar or like a Zoom call or something where people could ask questions back and forth. So it would be more useful to have a group, because there will be lots of questions. And right now is the time when people are making their seeding plans, like how many acres they're going to have in wheat and how many in different crops. So if it is on the radar to put a few quarters of land into hemp, then it's a good time to talk with them and at least have them prepared and give them some ideas of what they can do.
Yes, and we will also start working on some specific formulas for adding nutrients to the soil and to grow. It does seem as though hemp is the gift, sort of the gift of nature, to grow more beautiful, more abundant, healthier hemp and other crops as well. So we're going to be working on it on our end over the next couple of weeks, and hopefully create some soundtracks for the farmers for anyone actually that's trying to grow. Because I think we can accelerate it and refine the process so it's a bit quicker even than what you've been doing. And it might, help to reverse some of the depletion in the soil that has been globally experienced, and therefore in the nutrients in the food. So, so we will continue to collaborate. Is there anything else you'd like to say, though, about from what your own, what you've learned in terms of quantum optimization or scalar energy planting, I would call it?
The only other part that I just I kind of stumbled on it after harvest, when we have these big 4,000 or 5,000 bushel containers of this seed that's activated, I had to go up and just close the top of on the roof just to keep the weather out of them, and the vibration stays in the seed. Like it's like, if you can imagine a really large cylinder full of those activated seeds, the feeling of it is comparable to being right next to a Tesla coil. Like it maintains that vibration. So I don't know how to I haven't confirmed it, but it just caught me by surprise when I went up there and felt that actually standing on top of this huge container full of those treated seeds, it has a strong vibration to it. So it's just another confirmation that vitality or that vibration stays in the products.
Wow, so it's actually creating fields or creating bushels of scalarized seeds. Also, it's like they're awakened seeds. So, but it holds the vibration. So that's very encouraging that you can even experience the holding of the vibration. And thank you. And also thank you so much again for that Krillian photograph of before and after, because it is clear that seeds, farming, planting, anything, seeds have energy fields. And when you activate the energy field, of course, it's massive. So if we activated massive bushels of seeds all over the planet, it alone is providing scalar activation for the planet, because it'll hold the energy and then grow in that energy. So we all know from the experience, but it is like awakening the dormant potential of the seed, right? It's awakened.
Yes. Incredible.
Yeah. Because scalar is a living energy, so it just raises what we always say about it. It raises everything to its highest natural vibration. Humans, pets, that's why they're, but you know, so few are receptive to this concept. They say, you know, it's, so we're changing that, but it truly does that. So farming as, so what you're doing, there's no placebo. That's the beautiful thing, because that's always, even if people don't voice that question, they're wondering if it's a placebo or if it works or if we made it up yesterday or, you know, we're trying to, and no, it's not a placebo. I think that's where the seeds show us. And I think, you know, the application of even more conscious seeds, which is what it seems like hemp is, it'll probably have very strong results, because they are conscious seeds. They're here as transmutational energy fields. They're almost like mm-hmm. the empathic seeds, right? They take it on and transmute mm-hmm. it and put it out. Yeah, the mm-hmm. empaths of the seed kingdom. Yeah, so thank you so much. And I think we will. We'll organize a group. We also have some coffee growers that are looking into utilizing the technology in Costa Rica. And so we have, you know, a number of applications. And I'm starting to realize it's a very good way to dispel the myth that scalar energy might be a myth or something not real, is let the plant kingdom prove it, show us.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, mm-hmm. we might get healthy. So we'll set up a time, actually, for, you know, to gather a group together and have people ask questions. And thank
sure.
you so much for doing this research. It's probably the most impactful of anything, because people are very skeptical of human research. I know, first mm-hmm. of all, you know, it's often manipulated, as we all know. Yeah, you can't manipulate on these levels. So it's,
right.
thank you so much for doing this, and over a long period of time.
Yeah. Well, it just seemed like the most, I'm really orientated around solutions. I don't want to do half of a, I just want to, whatever is the most direct way to create a solution. And this is just, once people feel it and see it and do their own research, like, I'm not trying to sell anything to anybody, but they need to know that it's available. Just like they need to know, you know, all the other things that go along with business, is like, do some homework on it, go have a session, and then we can chat afterwards, because it's something that we kind of take for granted, because we live around these instruments 24/7, and it has just it's become a almost like a baseline frequency for us. But there's other people that they haven't had that gift. So it is like a orientation process.
Yes, and it does have, using the application of using the scalar technology, the miracle, throughout the globe, could have global implications for health, well-being, soil, and the planet. It's much bigger than us or selling something. It has global implications if you're interested in healing yourself and the planet through raising the quality of the energy around farming. This is a very viable solution. It's just more subtle. And it's much more powerful than people realize. That's why it can change the land over a few years. So, but mm-hmm. it is something that has global significance for the future and the present,
right.
actually. Generations
right.
to come. Because it's only going downhill. You were saying there are 100 million acres in the U.S. that are the brown, you know, that are completely contaminated land. Scary.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that only that's the stuff that doesn't grow anything, and as they come to realize, there's a lot of land that's being just producing commodities that is almost close to that same category. If they look and do the nutrient analyze the soil, it's totally dependent on non-natural fertilizers to grow anything. So all of the land needs help. It's not that there's just a few fields here or there. It's all of the land needs to be rebalanced and returned to growing. And the only thing that I want to just bring up for the people that are in agriculture is that, like, our farm is going on 5 generations now, and it is about growing food, not growing commodities. So, yeah, we need cash flow to do things, but the original, whatever, the calling of the farmer is to grow food. So,
nourishing food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've lost that. It's true. They're growing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So it sounds like you're talking about changing the consciousness around growing food.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more of just a reminder, and we can check in with people because, like, everyone is doing the best they can with what they have as far as the scenario goes. Everyone's got to pay their bills and do the best they can, but it's almost like we've crossed a threshold where it's just all around us. Like, we got to do something different here. Like, we're not gaining any progress. So even if people do a few fields and check it out, that's still better than nothing. Like, it's like take it one step at a time.
Mm, very true. Yes, and you can see it's like your own little laboratory. So, yes, absolutely. It makes the scalar energy is like a gift. It will, over time, make things easier, actually, produce more generous and more nutritious crops with using less resources of pesticides and fertilizer and even water. So we are definitely optimizing farming by the use of high-level instruments. So I guess there's the future, and it sounds like a global mission that you might be on, Keith.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, well, that's one of the things that I just was reminded of. The only reason why Tesla wasn't more successful with it when he was playing with it is that they couldn't meter it. That otherwise, if people would have been able to make money off of it, he would have got funding. We would have had it all over the place. But when he went to pitch the deal, they asked him, how do you meter this stuff? And he said, it's not possible. So that ended the conversation. It's like, now anything to do with metering is about cash flow. It's about paying somebody else. So now we've come to realize that I don't need meters around me. We need this natural energy that's not, it's all around us. We're just not using it.
Mm, very good point. It's all around us. Yes, mm-hmm. We happen to be focusing it. But yes, it is. It is all around us. So, so perhaps this is the beginning of some conversations in this direction. I think it is very, very powerful what you're talking about. And Tesla was trying to free people, actually. So we'll, and it's interesting how few understand even that, actually. So the use of scalar coils, how few understand that is another way to run all the energy. So we will continue the conversation, and I think one of the greatest laboratories is the fields, is to show what scalar can do. So on that note, we will have further conversations. Is there anything else you want to say? Well, if you're going to say something.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much, that's good if people want to connect with a group conversation. It would be nice to talk with them and see what questions come up, and we can go from there.
Excellent. Yes, we might have an interesting global conference call soon. And we'll look forward to that. Well, thank you again, Keith. And we're grateful to you.
No, thank you. Thank you. And Bob, this has been a big part of my life for the last 6 years or even a little longer now since I've been introduced to them. And it's just fun to work with you and everyone that's in the circle with these instruments and do what we can to create some solutions.
Create some solutions. I like that. Create some simple solutions. I like that. I love that. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. Thank you again.